You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
Good morning. First of all, I need to ask you all to pause for a second. If you are still with us on the live stream, thank you for your patience. Hopefully you can at least hear me now. We have worked out a temporary sound fix. It's not pretty, but neither am I. So just deal. But thank you for sticking with us this far, and we apologize for the... I don't even know what happened. We never know what happened. So anyway, all right, let's go ahead and hit the house lights here. For those of you that are in the room, obviously this month we are taking a break from Ignition so that our teachers can kind of have a break and get fired up a little bit for the fall as we begin Simply MC3, which isn't just a point series, but a whole movement of things that are going to happen. And so as we did last week, I would like to invite all of the students that have, the kids that have completed kindergarten through fifth grade, right? Is that right? Yeah. Completed kindergarten through fifth grade. If you would come up and join me on the stage, please. If you want to grab a stool and just set them across here like we did last week. So, go! Yeah, and be careful over there. They're trying to trip you. There are definitely more than two of you. There we go. All right, Luke Hale, I'm calling you right now. No, he's coming. He knows this is the announcement. I already told him that. Perfect. You guys are excellent. Excellent. Well done. Seriously, Luke, there's a little delay in the live stream, but now at this point, you're past the delay. All right. All right. Yeah, come on down here. Why don't you come on down to this end here a little bit? Yeah, watch out. Yeah, whatever way you want to go. Go that way. There. All right. Good, 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 good. There's more stools at this end if you need some. And all right. Excellent, excellent, excellent. Okay. Anybody else? You need one down here? Watch out for that cord, too. It's on purpose. We're trying to trip you. Although a couple years ago, we actually had traps on the stage for the kids. So that was, like, for real. All right. Do you have enough room? Almost there. Scooch. Can you scooch down? All right. Anybody slide? Yeah. Why don't you slide your chair? Like, she hasn't bitten much. At all. She says at all. I do remember. No. There's more. Oh, absolutely. We need to get more chairs at the end over there, too. All right. All right, and there's Luke. All right, here, why don't you do this? I will grab these for you. You girls, ladies, come on down this way. Luke, oh, my word. See, that's not what we wanted. All right, ladies, you can sit here. Luke, you can put a chair on the end there. Wow, this is excellent. So, Jay, we were talking about the angle for the camera. I don't even know if you'll get everybody here. But now here's the question that I have for you, or the situation. We're going to watch a video in a moment, okay? And you can either watch it here if you can see it here, or you can turn around and watch behind you. And as we watch this video, it's about two and a half minutes long. I'm going to need you guys to think about a couple of things. The first thing is I want to know which was your favorite, okay? Other things I want to know, I have more questions back there, but they're all the way behind the wall of you. One of them is, which one looks like it hurt the most? And, what else did I have on there? I'm sure there's other things. So as you watch about the videos, which one was your favorite? Which one do you think hurt the most? And probably maybe which one are you glad wasn't you? And I've got a couple other questions so you can think about as you watch the video. Does that make sense? Are you with me? So you're going to watch the video up there or here and then answer a few questions. And just why don't we get the lights out of their eyes and go ahead and play that video, and you guys can watch as well.
One.
Oh!
Oh, wow.
Oh!
Oh! Oh, baby.
Come on, man!
All right. So, first of all, did you notice a theme with all of those videos? What was happening in all of those videos? Yeah.
They all fall.
They all fall. That video was actually called, it was from America's Funniest Home Videos, called Falling Into Fall. So it kind of worked. Okay, so which was your favorite? Which was your favorite? All right, what have you got down here? Are you going to make a bird sound?
It was so funny.
Okay, so all of it? Just all of it. Okay, that's not a good enough answer. That answer is acceptable, but you have a favorite?
I do.
Yes, what's your favorite?
My favorite one was with the grandma when she did the cartwheel.
Oh, why do you assume she's a grandma?
The one with the hoverboard.
Oh, the hoverboard, okay. All right, anybody else? Favorite? All right, we've got a favorite down here.
The guy on the trampoline.
The guy on the trampoline that bounced kind of off. Anybody else? Yeah, yep.
The diving board.
Oh, the diving board that broke. Yeah, that was kind of rough. All right, anybody else? Favorite video? Favorite one? All right, what?
The guy that was on the beam.
On the beam, like kind of doing the swivel there at the end. Yeah, I don't know if you could hear it, but like it was like a little girl laughing at him. Yes?
I liked the hoverboard.
The hoverboard one, yeah. So I don't know if that was on purpose, but there was like a constant laughing person in the background. Did you notice that? That was really weird. All right. So my next question was, which one do you think hurt the most?
The one on the seesaw.
Oh, yeah. Okay. When it face first, yeah.
The one when the lady, she jumped on the stool.
She jumped on the stool?
Yeah, on the beach.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was like one of the first ones, right? What else? Anybody? Which one hurt the most?
It was the one on your trampoline.
The trampoline looked like it hurt the most? All right. Anybody else? Hurt the most? Yeah.
The grandma that flipped over.
Why do we assume it was a grandma? All right. Anybody else? The one hurt the most? All right.
The trampoline.
The trampoline. All right.
Likely the seesaw.
The seesaw? Yeah, that definitely. Has that ever happened to any of you? Have you been on? Do they have seesaws around anymore? Are they like illegal these days? You got hit in the face because your brother went too high. Yeah. And, well, there's something that my brothers used to do, or maybe I did to them. But I'm not going to tell you what that is because I don't want you to do that. All right. Any what you think hurt the most?
I think that it was the one with your bridge that was a tree.
Oh, where the lady fell off when she had the sticks and fell off of that. All right. Now, this one wasn't on, this wasn't one of the questions I asked ahead of time, but if you had to pick one, which one would you have liked to be? You have to pick one. So sort of like last week, you've got to pick one. Which one would you have wanted to be?
The boat one.
Which boat one? Were you the old lady that fell over? I mean,
yeah.
Maybe she wasn't old. You mean the old lady? Maybe she wasn't, okay? You mean that one or the water skiing one?
The
The water skiing one.
The water skiing one, yeah. Okay. Anybody else? Which else? What one would you have liked to be?
The girl that fell over on the leaves on when she tried to
cross the tree? Yeah, okay.
The one that was on the boat and they all flipped over.
And they flipped over? You would have liked to be that? It looked like it was cold, though. It looked like it was fall. You like cold stuff? Okay.
The trampoline.
The trampoline. That would have been fun until it wasn't. Anybody else? All right. Which one would you want to be?
The one when they climbed up the tree and fell in the water.
Yeah, that looked like fun. I couldn't tell if he was, like, prepared for the water or, you know. All right, what about you? Which one would you like to be?
It was the one with your diving board.
Where the diving board broke? Yeah. Yeah, has that ever happened to any of you? No? All right. All right, so here's just kind of a quick question. I'm not going to ask you individually. But do you think it felt good to be the people in the video? No? All right, actually, maybe I will interview. You say, how many of you say, no, it would not have felt good to be those people? All right, how many of you say, yes, it would have felt good to be those people? It's like they're all from the same family. Okay. So my question is, if you think it would not have felt good to be in the video, why? Why would it not have felt good? Yeah.
It would hurt.
It would hurt. All right. What else? Yeah.
You keep falling and falling and falling.
If it was you over and over, that would be kind of miserable, wouldn't it? Yeah.
You'd probably break something.
You'd break something. All right.
If you broke an arm, that would hurt.
That would hurt. Yes. Thank you. You've heard it here first, folks. If you break an arm, it hurts. Yeah.
If you were a boy, it would really hurt.
If you were a boy, it would hurt, too. We'll just... All right. So, let me ask you this. And then... I guess we should get going, too. How do you think the people felt when everybody was laughing at them? Do you think that made them feel better or worse?
Worse.
Yeah, I mean, and sometimes, you know, you laugh at yourself because... It's funny to do that, but good. Yeah, so all those videos were about people falling, and every time someone fell, what did we do when they fell? We laughed at them, right? All right, well, good. We'll come back to that idea in a second, but why don't you guys, first of all, why don't we thank them for their insight into falling, and if you guys could grab your stools and stack them at the ends and go ahead and have a seat, just watch out for the wires, especially at that end. Down there. Watch out for the wires. We good, good. Good there. Good there. All right. You can go that way, whichever way. Whoa. Yeah, guys. So next week, you'll be in here, and then the following week, you'll have to go where it's like, you know, boring in ignition. Actually, ignition is not boring. It's exciting, and you don't have to listen to me the whole time. If that falls, don't laugh, because it might fall on Amy. So, we are continuing this series in Proverbs, and we've got, one more week after this week. And as we've said from the beginning, the book of Proverbs are observations about life. And these observations are not necessarily if-then, but just examples that are true-to-life statements that the writers have observed these things, and because of these things, they've made some statements for us to understand. And as we looked at that video, as we watched these people fall and we laugh, today's proverb is actually going to be just the opposite of that. And the point that I want us to get this morning is wise up and step down. Because a lot of times when we are in a position where someone else around us falls, we laugh. We point fingers. We laugh at them and say, ha, ha, ha. And granted, like, if you fall, if someone falls, you know, if they're your friends, you laugh at them. And that's part of life. You know, we enjoy those little moments. But we're going to talk about it a little bit more seriously when it comes to people that you want to see them fall. And how are we supposed to respond when someone that we don't like, when someone that we consider our enemy, when someone that's really done mean things to us, when they get hurt, are we going to laugh at them, or are we going to step down from that position of being above and do something different? So we're looking at this proverb today that comes from chapter 24 in the book of Proverbs, verses 17 to 18. And this particular proverb, as we said, the book of Proverbs was written by different people. What we mostly know about this, we definitely know about this, is that this is one of the proverbs that are called Sayings of the Wise. So it could have been Solomon that wrote this, but there's a collection of proverbs here in these chapters in the middle that are called the Sayings of the Wise. And so the wise, whoever they are, said this in verse 17. It says, "Do not gloat when your enemy falls. When they stumble, do not let your heart rejoice, or the Lord will see and disapprove and turn his wrath away from them." And so this is an interesting proverb. The first thing about this is that it is written in a way that is called synonymous parallelism. Did it just get dark here? Synonymous parallelism. And what that means is that there, and this is just, it's a form of poetry, a writing style. And what it means is that something is said and then said the same way again to help make the point. So something is said and then said again to help make the point so that people understand exactly what is being said. And so because of this style of writing, I'm going to break it down in terms of the logical way we would understand it, just to make it very clear, because there are some repeated phrases, and I'll just show the synonyms are gloat and letting your heart rejoice. Those are synonyms. When your enemy falls, when they stumble, those are synonymous phrases, meaning they're the same. And so the idea is that these are repeated to help you get the idea, to help you understand the concept. But again, we're going to do it in a more of a logical way just to clean it up so we don't get too confused by the statements. And so I want to talk about when falling isn't funny. When falling isn't funny. When falling isn't funny. There we go. Oh, it's like tripping out there. Wow, that's weird. When falling isn't funny. The first thing, and so here's, again, the logical breakdown of the way this proverb works. It's not going to be in order the way you read it, but just to understand what's happening. The first thing is that if your enemy is ruined. If enemy is ruined, that's the first part. And in verses 17, and I know you guys give me a hard time and about the A, B, C deal, but we're looking at 17B and C, because A, B, C, D are the four parts of verse 17. And in B and C, the writer says, when your enemy falls, when they stumble. Again, these are parallel things. These are the same things repeated. And the interesting things about these words, this was written in Hebrew, and the word fall and the word stumble, neither of them are used in the way that we think of that word. Like, oh, I fell, I stumbled. These words actually have a much more, let's say they have a deeper meaning or a more intentional meaning. And the point is this, fall doesn't mean they trip. This stumble doesn't mean they catch their foot. We went hiking in Ricketts Glen the other day and there's a root there and I tripped on it and I looked back at it and it's a place where a lot of people hike and it was like polished. It was polished because that many people had tripped on that root. Like it had a shine and a glaze. It looked like somebody had polyurethaned it because it had been rubbed by so many feet. And this isn't what that word means. This word means actually to be brought down, to come to ruin, to come to a spot where everything is falling apart, to have things bottom out, to get to a spot where maybe a bad thing happens to you. So it's definitely a deeper word that means to be brought to ruin or to be brought to a spot of hurt, of disaster, of pain. Again, a little bit deeper than just simply tripping or having the diving board break or bouncing backwards off of the trampoline. But what this would mean to us, this part of if your enemy is ruined, what we might say is when your enemy finally gets what's coming to them, when they finally get what they deserve, that's what this word means. This would be, you know, when that bully who picks on everyone else in the lunch table spills their tray all over themselves. Yeah. That's the, like, oh, that's the downfall. Yeah. Or, you know, the cheating coworker finally gets caught. Oh, they get what's coming to them. They are ruined. They got what they deserved. Or, you know, when you're speeding down the road, clearly listen to my words. When you're speeding down the road and then someone speeds past you faster, and you're like, oh, stupid speeder. And then they get pulled over, you're like, ha, they got caught. I didn't say you're driving down the road according to the speed limit. You're speeding, but they just happen to be speeding-er. And they get caught, and you're like, yeah, yeah, they got what's coming to them. That's what this phrase means. It's not an accidental thing, but it's more like a God bringing them to account for their sin. That okay, eventually, and we've talked about this many times, and we're not going to get into too deep on it right now, but our sin, even though forgiven through Jesus by believing in his death on the cross, our sin still has consequences. And that sin can be forgiven, but there are still consequences for it. And kids, you know, if your parents say, don't touch that, and you disobey, your parents will probably still forgive you and love you, but there's going to be a consequence. And I think I've shared this before, but I remember when I was in elementary school, I went to visit my grandparents in Florida, and Florida's in the South. I grew up in Delaware. Delaware is not. If you don't know where Delaware is on a map, I would point it out to you, but you probably can't find it because it's so small. But anyway, but hey, great thing. Never mind, I won't go there. But I remember going down south, and I hadn't been to the South before. And my grandfather, we're sitting there, we were at this little park, and there was like this curious hill of ants. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. Look at them all. They're all around everywhere. And he's like, don't touch those. I'm like, oh, I touch ants all the time. I let them crawl all over me. And so I touch them. And in the South, the ants are not like we have. They are called what? Fire ants, and they bit me and burned and everything. And my grandfather, he was like, hey, you know, I forgive you. I still love you. But there's consequences for your disobedience. There's consequences for your sin. And I got what was coming to me. And so that's kind of this idea. And so the writer of Proverbs says here, when our enemy is ruined, if your enemy is ruined, if they finally get what's coming to them, that's the first part. The second thing is, if enemy is ruined, what's the next thing? Then do not rejoice. Do not rejoice. Do not celebrate. Do not gloat. And that's what the part A and part D of this parallelism says. The writer says this: do not gloat when your enemy stumbles. Do not let your heart rejoice. Again, these are the same things repeated to make the point. And this really has this idea of not just that was funny, but like a deep, and that's why the word heart is used. Do not let your heart rejoice. Don't let this become an issue of when they fall, when they come to ruin, when they finally get what's coming to them, that we're going, slow clap. You know, like that evil kind of like, this isn't just, oh, you fell. No, this is like that deep thing where we're like, oh yeah, it's about time. It's about time you finally got what's coming to you. You deserve to have that food dumped all over you. You deserve to get fired from this company. Ha, 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 sucker. And the writer of Proverbs says, you know what? Don't respond that way. We cannot let that be our response. We shouldn't gloat or celebrate or laugh when again, this isn't somebody that we like and we care about. This is our enemy. When someone we don't like, when someone that has done something to us, when someone has hurt someone we care about, those are the people we would call our enemy. And when they finally get what's coming to them, when God brings them basically accountability for their sin, the writer of Proverbs says, don't gloat, don't rejoice, don't be excited down deep within. Don't do that. And so that raises the question of why, you know, because we shouldn't be fist pumping. It's not like, yeah, that's a fist pump. There we go. Couldn't remember it. All right. So this is bump, this is pump. They're like, yeah, finally. No. We're not supposed to do that. We're not supposed to rejoice or gloat. And again, this is, right, so far we're already like, this is crazy, unnormal territory, a non-human type behavior. Because as soon as someone we don't like gets hurt, we like to gloat. I mean, we love it. That's what we like about movies. We love it when the guy gets it in the end, when finally they get what's coming to them, or the comeuppance, K-U-M-M-E-M-P-M-A-N-M-N-M-C, or something like that. But it's that word that they finally get what they deserve. And the writer says, do not rejoice. And this is interesting. Here's why, or here's what happens. If we rejoice, then If your enemy is ruined, then do not rejoice, or God will relent. And this is very interesting. So before this, up to this point, it was weird, non-normal behavior for humans. We want to see them get what they deserve. But then he adds this extra twist, or God will relent, or God will not bring them the punishment they are receiving, that they are enduring. And that's what part 8, Proverbs 18b, now we got A and B, two lines. It says, turn his wrath away from them. God will turn his wrath away. The word to turn is to go the other direction, to stop, to cease. And so there's some kind of a weird connection here, and we'll see what that connection is in a moment. But the writer of Proverbs is saying, if your enemy falls, if they suffer ruin, and you start to rejoice and celebrate over it, God's going to stop the punishment that they're enduring. And this is, again, very, okay, this is weird. Like, what's going on here? And so he says that we shouldn't do that because God's going to stop their punishment. So if the enemy is ruined, then do not rejoice, or God will relent because of your response. And again, now we're like, there's another weird layer. So he says, if your enemy is ruined, and you rejoice, God will relent because of the way you responded to it. And that's part A of verse 18, which says, or the Lord will see and disapprove. And this word disapprove is a Hebrew, we read it as one word, disapprove in English. But it's actually three Hebrew words that are combined to make this. And the word literally means that he will see it as evil in his eyes. So something about our reaction to when our enemy is hurting has God looks at us and says, no, that's wrong, and pulls back. And so from a human standpoint, this seems very weird. So wait, the one that's always the one doing wrong, the one that's my enemy, they finally get what's coming to them. I'm excited about it. And then God says, I'm angry at you for being excited that the enemy finally got what was coming to them. What? This doesn't make sense from human perspective. But it's a good thing that the Bible is inspired by God. That he was the one that inspired the words, inspired the authors to write this. Because from God's perspective, this is exactly who he is. Because what's happening here is that we serve and are saved by a God that is near to the brokenhearted. A God that cares about the humble. A God that loves the broken. A God that is there for the downtrodden. The ones that don't have anything to celebrate and boast about. And so when you look at this proverb, the writer is saying, if you see someone that's hurting and they receive the punishment that they deserve, but then you start celebrating, all of a sudden, you have changed, all of a sudden, you have changed their role. They are now not just the person getting what they deserve, but they are the downtrodden that you are gloating over, that you are standing above and looking down upon. And God says, that's where I operate. I operate within the broken and within the hurting and within the downtrodden, not with the arrogant. And so if you think yourself a good follower of Jesus and a one who loves and worships God, and as soon as you see someone that gets what they deserve, which is not your job, by the way, and start to celebrate it, God's like, oh, no, you don't. All right, I will pull back from them, because the moment we turn their hurt, their ruin, into our arrogance, it changes the story. It flips the script, because God says, no, that's not how I operate. And specifically, Peter says this in the letter, one of the two letters that he wrote. He tells followers of Jesus, all of you, clothe yourselves with humility. And clothing is different. Peter did not say, put a hat of humility on. It wasn't a little thing. It wasn't like, you know, wear the scarf of humility. He says, clothe yourself with humility. Humility should be who we are toward one another, toward others, toward everyone. Because, why? Because God opposes the proud, but shows favor to the humble. God is anti-arrogant. Because arrogance says, I'm good enough, I've figured it out, I don't need anyone else's help. And God said, fine, good luck with that. But when we get to the spot where we are humbled, that's where God steps in and shines. God opposes the proud and shows favor to the humble. And if you notice, that's in quotes because Peter is quoting a proverb. That's actually Proverbs 3:34. And so Peter brings up this idea of God is anti-proud and shows favor or gives grace to the humble, is the way another translation says. God gives the people that don't deserve it what they don't deserve. And for us, and spoiling a little bit of where we're going to go, for us, if we look at someone else and say, ha ha, you're getting what you deserve, sucker. If God were to flip that mirror and be like, oh, do you want what you deserve too? It's a different story. He then says, humble yourselves, therefore, under God's mighty hand, not under other people, so that He, God, may lift you up in due time. So it's totally different here. He says, when you see someone fall, it's not funny. We need to look at this from a very different perspective, not from our human perspective, but from God's perspective. So if the enemy is ruined, then do not rejoice, or God will relent because of your response. Because God cares for the downtrodden and the humble. And in those moments of our arrogance, then God says, okay, let me just show my grace in this moment to that person that doesn't deserve it either. That doesn't deserve it either. So the point is, instead of standing above someone laughing at them, we need to wise up and step down. We need to humble ourselves. We need to place ourselves beneath other people. And like I said, what we have here in that proverb is from our perspective, it's totally flipping the script. From God's perspective, that's how God operates. That's who God is. And so I want to talk about what it looks like to flip the script. So how do we step down? How do we see that person? And again, this isn't like the people you care about. You're not like, oh, my brother was hurt. I'm going to go over. They fell off of the seesaw because the other guy jumped off. I don't know what just happened there. Nobody said that. And you go over because you care about them. And you go over and say, I care about you. But when it's your enemy, we're like, sucker. But that is exactly the opposite of what we are called to react. And I want to talk about what that looks like. How does it look to flip the script? The first thing, as we said, is step down. So what does step down look like? Step down means remember your sin. So you guys are all in here. Last week, you know, we kind of got some of the blood flowing. We're going to get a little more blood flowing today, this morning. And I want to add some little motions to this. And for step down, this idea is we need to remember our sin. And the point of remembering our sin means, you know what, I'm no better than you are. Like, you're in a bad spot, you're suffering because of the consequences of your sin. You know what, my consequences look different because my sin looks different, but we're still in the same boat. We're still in the same category of people that are broken because of our sin. And so what I want to do with this one is, go ahead and stand up, if you can, unless you have a sleeping child on your lap, which could be some of you in this room. All right, we're online. But this one, the motion here, and we're going to get up and down. You know, I see you're all stretching like, I don't know how to move in church. What does this look like? Next week we'll have recliners because that's in our budget. But the step down here is this idea of remembering our sin. And so what we're going to do is we're going to hang our head and point to ourselves. So I can't tell if you're doing that, but you're going to do that. Point to yourself because this is our sin. And so go ahead, you can look up. And I'll just spoiling something, and there's another guy in the room that does the same thing, but I used to be a worship leader at our previous church, and I had this habit that if I made a mistake, I would be like, I'd point to me and do that. I know other people that do that too, because it's like, I don't want anybody else to be like, it's their fault. No, this is me. And that's what this is. Stepping down says, you know what? This is me. Okay, so you can sit down, as we talk about step down. And so this means remember who we are, remember our sin. And in Romans chapter 12, Paul writes to the church that he planted in Rome, and he says this, and it's pretty straightforward here, folks, because we like to laugh at the people that are down, when they're down, especially our enemies. He says, because of the privilege and authority God has given me, God tells me to say this, he's inspired me, I give each of you this warning. Don't think you are better than you really are. And it should come with like an asterisk at the end. Especially if you were born in America. Like, we are in the land of plenty. We are in you know, we've been watching a documentary on World War II and just what the American allies brought to that war and post-war recovery. Like, all these different things about how amazing America is. And I'm not disagreeing with that, but it brings a little bit of an attitude. It says, well, I am kind of amazing. I am kind of superior. I am better than everyone else. And Paul's like, don't think you are better than you really are. He says, be honest in your evaluation of yourselves. And I love that. Like, look in a mirror. And I've talked about this so many times. You know, we're vampires when it comes to our own issues. Because we stand in a mirror and we don't have a reflection. When we look at ourselves, we don't see the issues that we have. Everyone else around you is like, oh, yeah, the emperor has no clothes. But we go through life being like, we're pretty awesome. And Paul's like, no, no, no. Be honest. Let's be real here. You might be in a good spot today, but remember where you were yesterday. Remember where you were before this. Remember what your life was like before Jesus rescued you. And so when you look at this world around you of people without Jesus that are floundering and suffering for their sin, let's not celebrate. Don't gloat. Let's be honest about how we look at ourselves. Be honest in our evaluation. Don't think you're better than you really are. Measure yourselves by the faith God has given us. Hey, the only reason I have anything to offer is because of what God has done in me. And that's true for you too. You got nothing. Sorry, kids, you're losers. And the only reason that we have any value, one, because of the image of God that is in us, and two, because of the rescue that Christ has brought us through. So over in Ephesians, Paul says something else. He's like, to the church in Ephesus that he planted, he's like, I want to remind you of some things, folks. Don't forget, let's look at ourselves with honesty, with humility. Let's have an honest perspective. And in Ephesians chapter 2, verses 1 to 3, he says, once you were dead. Remember, folks, remember? Once you were dead because of your disobedience and many sins. So when you think about that enemy that has fallen, once you were like them. Don't forget that. You were dead. He says, you used to live in sin, just like the rest of the world, obeying the devil, the commander of the powers in the unseen world. He is the spirit at work in the hearts of those who refuse to obey God. He says, when you look at this world and these people that were like, ha ha, sucker, you finally got what's coming to you. Paul says, that was you. Who do you think you are? All of us used to live that way, following the passionate desires and inclinations of our sinful nature. By our very nature, we were subject to God's anger. By our very nature, we will fall. We have fallen. We have fallen to the ground. We are ruined. That's the same concept here that Paul is using that we looked at in Proverbs. Just like everyone else. And so before we start looking at those, and again, like, we're going to start getting a little personal here, but I think we can look at those people around us and we're like, oh, well, they got what they deserve. We can do our, those, insert political party here, finally got what was coming to them. We can say, those, insert different race than me, finally got what they deserved. Like, we have all of these things that we build up, like, all of those people, those sinners out there, why aren't they more like Jesus? Because they don't know Jesus. And we'll get to that in a second. But Paul says, don't forget who you are. You're just like them. You were just like them. You're not any better. The only difference is what Jesus did in you. So, stand up. The first thing that we're going to do is we're going to step down. So go ahead and do that. It's me. Step down. All right. Don't forget that. When you see someone, when you realize, oh, look at them. And maybe it's big picture, those people across the world, or maybe it's that guy across the street that you really can't stand. Maybe it's that neighbor that the police finally came and gave him a talking to or whatever. I don't know whatever happened. You know what I'm saying? But we remember, like, that was us. If God had left you alone, you would have been there. The second thing when it comes to flip the script is to reach out. To reach out. And this is release your anger. Let it go. Care for the other person. And so here, and I can't do this because I'm by myself, but here what I want you to do is shake hands with the person next to you. All right, see that? See my shake hands. All right, reach out, shake hands. Like, hey, come have some common ground. First of all, you're going, you know what? I'm no better than you are. I'm stepping down, but I'm also reaching out. I'm here for you. I'm letting go of my anger and my bitterness, and I'm forgiving you. So you're my enemy because of something that has happened to me in some way, shape, or form. But now I'm reaching out and I'm forgiving you. You guys can have a seat. So step down, you're remembering your sin, you're reaching out, you're releasing your anger, you're forgiving others. And again, we're like, oh, well, that's easier for you to say, Sean. You don't know what they've done, or they deserve this, or their life has been, and they've always caused me this problem. Okay, you're probably right. I don't understand. Unfortunately, there's Luke chapter 23, 33 to 40, 34. So you're right. I don't get it. So when they came to a place called the skull, there they nailed Jesus to the cross. And the criminals were also crucified, one on his right and one on his left. As they are nailing Jesus to the cross, Jesus said, Father, forgive them. You have no excuse. We have no excuse. He says, Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing. This is Jesus saying, look, I mean, aside from the fact that this is totally flipping the script, not even later, like, yeah, I'm healed now, resurrected, did that thing, boom, stone rolled away. I guess I forgive you. Water under the bridge. This is in the moment. Jesus says, Father, forgive them. And so he is our example. We call ourselves Christ followers, or maybe you've used the word Christian, which literally means little Christ. Why? Because we are doing what Jesus did. What did Jesus do? Jesus forgave while they were nailing him to the cross. So our story is not anywhere close to that. We need to reach out and release the anger, forgive them. And Jesus flips everything. He flips everything when he shows up, because until this moment, it was all about, until Jesus shows up on the scene, it was all about revenge is what people deserve. Get them back for what they did. If someone does this to you, do it back to them. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. They take out your eye, you take out their eye. All's fair. But Jesus changes everything. And in that moment, on the cross, he says, Father, forgive them. And now, here comes the hinge. Here comes the why we are supposed to respond, not with anger, not with, oh, ha ha, you got what's coming to you. We are to respond by reaching out, because we have a job to do. Because as Paul said, those people out there, they were just like you before Jesus changed their life. And so Paul says to the church in Corinth, you know what? We've got a job to do then. If they don't know Jesus, and our lives have been changed and theirs haven't, instead of gloating and rejoicing about their failures, maybe we should share with them what Jesus did to us, did for us. And in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, the church he planted in Corinth, Paul says this, all of this is a gift from God who brought us back to himself through Christ. You and I, as followers of Jesus, if we believe in his death on the cross to take away our sin, we have been brought back to Christ. And God has given us the task of reconciling people to him. That's what reconcile means. We've been brought back. Our relationship with Jesus has been fixed. Has been solved, has been reconciled. And now we have the task of reconciling other people to him. For God was in Christ reconciling the world to himself. because of Jesus, the whole world, no longer counting their sins against them. And He has given us this wonderful message of reconciliation. So we, you and me, you and I, whatever, are Christ's ambassadors. We're representing Jesus to the world. God is making His appeal through us. God is using us to share that message with the world. And so Paul says, we speak for Christ when we plead. Ha ha, sucker. How does it feel to be a loser now? But that's not what Paul said. We plead, come back to God. Because when we flip this script, when we do things instead of laughing at the people that are ruined, that finally get what's coming to them, as your enemy, as the ones you hate, as the ones you're so glad they finally got it. We are told, no, no, no. Instead of rejoicing, we offer a handout. Why? Because you might be the reason that that person comes to Jesus. And I can assure you that as a representative of Jesus, as a representative of MC3, as a representative of God's church, of Christ, as a Christian, whatever, your mocking and tearing down someone that's fallen will not draw them to Jesus. I can assure you of that. Because they'll be like, oh yeah, you're just like those Christians that I knew. I don't want anything to do with you or what you represent or who you represent. But we are Christ's ambassadors. This is the hinge. It changes everything. It makes what the writer of Proverbs said about not gloating and not rejoicing over those who fall. It makes so much sense, because if we don't do that, they might go, wait a second, why aren't you laughing at me? I've been so mean to you all these years. I've done these horrible things all these years. I hurt those people you loved. I tore down that family that you had. Why would you possibly care about me? Well, because I used to be there too. And I had a God that cared enough about me that He sent His Son, Jesus, to rescue me when I was fallen. Can I tell you about Him? We are Christ's ambassadors. As though God is making His appeal through us, we speak for Christ, when we plead, come back to God. Come back to God. You know how often we pray for those family members and friends that we love and care about, want to see them come to Jesus. I've never heard a prayer request. Hey, can we pray for the guy I hate? But can I just, not that we're using this, but do you want to see a guy that you hate become a guy that you like? Watch Jesus transform their life. So, please stand up. We're not holding on to our grudges. We're forgiving. So the first thing we're going to do is we're stepping down. Step down. Remember our sin. Hey, I'm just like you. I'm not above you looking down. I'm not going, ha ha, I was there too. The second thing is we reach out. We forgive. We release our anger. Hey, I'm here. Let me tell you about what Jesus did in my life. I forgive you. I've forgiven that. And the final thing is to help up. Help up. And that's to serve your enemies. So we're going from I'm up here to now I'm even with you to now I'm caring about you to now I'm serving you. And so serving is simply, hey, we're putting our arms around the person next to us. I care about you. I want to help you. Yeah. And unfortunately, I should have sold some of you this ahead of time, and you could have planned who you sat next to and be like, oh, I want to put my arm around him. So, all three of them, ready? Step down, reach out, help up. All right, you can have a seat. And this is the idea of serving our enemies. Again, natural instinct is we want to kick them when we're down. We want to strike fast, strike hard, no mercy, sir. Yes, sensei. But Jesus says the opposite in Luke chapter 6. He says, but to you who are listening, you're accountable now because you're listening. To you who are listening, I say, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who mistreat you. You see, these are the opposite ends of the spectrum. And culture says, hurt your enemies. Do good to those, hate those who hate you. Cancel those who curse you. Pray that they would get hurt for those that mistreat you. And Jesus says, do the opposite. What does that look like? Hey, if someone slaps you one cheek, give them the other. Give them the other also. Wait, you mean I don't fight back? No, not if you care about winning them to Jesus. If someone takes your coat, don't withhold your shirt. Give your shirt. Hey, do you need a shirt too? Give to everyone who asks you. If anyone takes what belongs to you, don't even demand it back. If you're talking about brothers and sisters in Jesus, then we have another process here. But this, he's talking about those people that don't know Jesus. Those people in the world, those people that you work with that really drive you crazy, that really could use a change of heart. Do to others as you would do, have them do to you. He says, just to clarify just for all of you, he says, if you love everyone who loves you, what credit is that to you? Again, this isn't for the people that you're close to. Even sinners love those who love them. So the people outside, they do the same thing. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. And if you do good to those who are good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do that. And if you lend to those whom you expect repayment, what credit is that to you? Oh, I'll gladly give you $5 as long as you give it back to me tomorrow. But Jesus says, just give. Just give to people that are your enemies because you might be the reason that they change. He says, but love your enemies. Do good to them and lend to them without expecting anything back. Then your reward will be great and you will be children of the Most High because He is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. Because He is the God of the downtrodden. Because God opposes the proud but gives grace to the humble. So be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. That was Jesus. Paul repeats the same thing over in Romans chapter 12. He says, bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Mourn with those who mourn. Live in harmony with everyone, with one another. Do not be proud, but be willing to associate with people of low position. Do not be conceited. Do not repay anyone evil for evil. By the way, does it feel like this is getting beaten into our heads? There must be a reason. Did you hear me the first time? Well, maybe you heard me the 78th time, Jesus says. Paul's like, remember that thing Jesus said 78 times? Let me bring another 2,500 times to that. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everyone. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, and a lot does in how we react to people, like everything is how we react to people, live at peace with everyone. Do not take revenge, my dear friends, but leave room for God's wrath. For it is written, it is mine to avenge, I will repay, says the Lord. On the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. In doing this, you will heap burning coals on his head. And I need to pause there. That's a proverb also, Proverbs 25, 21 to 22. And this heaping burning coals on your head, I need to quickly explain what's happening. If you lived in the time of the Proverbs and you had a fire and your fire went out, you would go to your neighbor and say, hey, can I borrow a coal to get my fire going again? And they would typically carry these coal bins on their head, these coal pans, because that's the best place to put them. They would keep them on their head, and they would carry it, and then take it over and use it to restart their fire. Sort of like your neighbors coming over. I don't think this really happens much anymore, but, you know, hey, can I have a quart of milk for my recipe? Can I have a hot coal? And the Proverbs, writer of Proverbs is saying, by doing this, you're not just caring for them. You're giving them more than they ever needed. The same thing. If they ask for one, give them two. If they give you one cheek, give them the other. If they ask for your coat, give them your shirt also. If they ask for one coal, heap burning coals on their head. Help them. This does not mean tremendously scald them and destroy their facial features forever by pouring hot coals on their face. Okay, that is not what we're looking at here. There's no like Vecna thing going on. He says, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Over and over and over. Why? Because we have the opportunity by serving people to draw them to Jesus. But by pushing them away, that will never happen. We serve our enemies because of what God did for us. We use serving to draw them to Jesus. Again, that's the opportunity. And can I just say this? You might have an enemy. And we're running late. I'm sorry. You might have an enemy and you're like, oh, I cannot stand that person. I hope they get what's coming to them. I hope they get what they deserve. And then that thing happens. And you're like, yes, this is my chance. Ha ha, sucker. That enemy very well may have a family member or friend that goes to their church small group and says, can you pray for my friend, for my brother? So far from Jesus. I don't know what it's going to take to bring them to Jesus. We've talked with them. They're not interested. They don't care. So that same person that they're asking their church to pray for is your enemy. Your enemy falls. And instead of kicking them when they're down, you offer them hope. You step down. You pick them up. You say, hey, I'm just like you. How can I help you? How can I serve you? And you may have been the answer to Great Aunt Susie's prayer request. Because you were the enemy that served them. And they said, why would you do this for me? Well, let me tell you, I'm an ambassador of Jesus Christ. Let me tell you what he has done in my life. So, we'll stand up. This is a perfect way to stand out. Obviously, we have the phrase cancel culture is used so much. And if you look at cancel culture, it is zero grace. It is zero grace. It means you make a mistake, you're done. That is not Jesus. I don't care where you are on the political spectrum. I don't care where you are in terms of your rights and your deserves or any of that. Jesus is not a canceling God, because if he was a canceling God, we would be dead in our sins on our way to hell. Instead, he actually, this is a quote from the Bible, canceled the power of sin in our lives. So, what do? When we see someone that's hurting, we flip the script and we step down. Remember your sin. You're no different than they were. We reach out and we help up. That is what we are called to do. And maybe in doing that, you will draw someone to Jesus and offer them hope that they would never have received, definitely would not have received from you, if you gloated, if you kicked them when they were down, if you celebrated over their ruin. Because we are to wise up and step down. Why don't we just stay standing and we'll pray. Father, thank you so much for your word. God, and this, even as I was preparing and studying this passage, it seems so, what? Why? I don't get it. But the more we look into it, we see that it is a weird reflection of human desires, but a perfect reflection of you and your willingness to care for the downtrodden and the oppressed and the hurting. And that is who we are. And so I pray that as we encounter people that we would consider enemies, as we come across the moments when they fall, when they get what we think they deserve, help us to step down. God, help us to come alongside of them and say, hey, I'm no different than you. And help them up and serve them. And in doing so, may they see the light of Jesus, your light, God, shining through us, that they may see our good deeds and glorify you and want to know more about this Jesus that we serve, that would care enough for someone that was their enemy that fell to pick them up. And Father, we thank you that we who were once enemies of God, that you stepped down literally from your throne in heaven to become a human on this planet to rescue us in our sin. And we are grateful for that. God, help us to remember that as we care for those around us. Thank you for this wonderful group of people that we get to worship and serve and stretch together in life with, God. And I pray for a great week as we leave here from now. In Jesus' name, amen.